Do you ever wonder what's happening behind the scenes of the multi-trillion dollar fashion industry? In the new podcast, Fashion People, Puck correspondent and 20-year fashion veteran Lauren Sherman and a rotating cast of industry insiders discuss what fashion people are really talking about behind the scenes of the star-studded business, from creative director switcheroos to M&A drama, DTC downfalls, and Met Gala mishaps. Fashion People, a presentation of Odyssey in partnership with Puck, is available now wherever you get your podcasts. Make Me Smart is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where? Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
You're like, holy cow, dude. Oh, also, I had to be on the phone with the insurance company today, so there's that. Hey, everybody. I'm Kai Rizdal. Welcome back to Make Me Smart. That other voice you hear commiserating with me is one Molly Wood. Back.
I'm back.
Better than
I'm
ever.
Back
and better than ever.
I am delighted to be back. I will have so many adventures to tell you about in a couple of months. Thank you for joining us.
Spoiler alert.
Thanks to the wonderful cast of characters who rolled through while I was gone. I mean, honestly, it's kind of nice to shake it up. I'm sure people were excited to hear some different perspectives, some actual facts as opposed to my blither blather. Just kidding.
All Kimberly Adams all facts. The time.
Right? The time. I mean, the woman knows everything.
She does.
I am thrilled to be back. We're going to do the news fix. We're going to do a little Make Me Smile, and then we'll call it a day. Shall we begin?
We shall. I'm just going to real quick do my thing, and then we need to spend some time digging in on yours. And I will confess here to break the fourth wall that the rundown basically says, let's talk about Molly's thing, and oh, by the way, it's ridiculously hot in Portland. And I'm mentioning Portland only because that's where my mom and my brother live, and it's like 114 degrees today, and it was like cooler in Las Vegas practically. And that's just insane. Insane.
And so you will see, actually, at the bottom of my links, there's a little one that says side note with a link to Twitter.
Oh, is that
and that's
your,
what
is
it's
that
about.
Your weather thing?
Yeah. Same thing.
Yeah.
Palm Springs and Portland are 1 degree different. I saw a tweet earlier today, and I think this is actually accurate, that said that what happened in Texas and what is happening with these heat waves and what is happening with the drought across the West, starting, you know, as far east as North Dakota, because I was on the phone with my mom this weekend, is as big a deal as COVID. And should prompt an equal government response. There have been arguments over the years that heat waves should get names like hurricanes do because they do so much damage and they really do kill people. And it's just I mean, 114 degrees in Portland, Oregon.
Yeah. Yep.
Not
my mom
okay.
just moved there and I had to call her and make sure that her new place has air conditioning. I was like, Mom, I'm really sorry, but I need to check up on you, you know?
Does it? Because that's unusual, I think,
up there.
It
does, so we're all set.
Yeah.
Oh, it's totally unusual. Good. Yeah, so, yeah.
It's also so weird to look at this and see 105 Seattle, 114 Portland, 114 Medford, San Francisco, 61.
Oh, God.
We're where it's at. Come on down if you need to. It won't last, but come on. or up if you're south.
Up, wherever. Yeah, because it's like 95 on my front porch, but that's a whole different deal. It's supposed to be hot here. Okay. So that's the environmental news of the day, but there's an arguably more proximate story that we need to talk about that you're going to set up for us.
Yes, big breaking news, business and antitrust story today. I actually had to triple check this breaking news alert that said that a federal judge had thrown out the FTC's lawsuit and all of the state lawsuits against Facebook, more than 40 states, and the FTC had filed antitrust lawsuits against Facebook. And on Monday, this federal judge in the U.S. District Court for District of Columbia said, nope, you, in the case of the FTC, all you did was write down that Facebook was a monopoly. And that is not going to cut it. You actually have to prove that in order to file this lawsuit. And then in the case of the states, said, Sorry, I know you're all upset in retrospect about Facebook buying Instagram and WhatsApp back in 2012 and 2014, respectively, but that was too long ago, and you can't sue over it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was a huge deal.
Okay, so do you think it's really a huge deal, or is it just an invitation for Lina Khan, the new chair of the Federal Trade Commission, and noted person who has strong opinions on antitrust about big tech? Is it an opportunity for her to put her legal skills to work? She comes out of Columbia Law School, right? And refine this lawsuit, right?
Absolutely.
That's how
so
I'm reading
what's
this. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. What is, you know, this is in no way the end of the story. In fact, the judge specifically said the FTC at least had 30 days to refile its complaint. And yes, now you have Lina Khan in there. She is not messing around. And I think,
right.
I mean, I think that nerds who are into like antitrust law and legal Twitter, myself, like I'm actually pretty excited to read it. Because
wow.
She is good at law and also writing.
Oh, man.
Like, I'm just rubbing my hands together with excitement. Like, oh, this is going to be good. This is going to be a hot day on legal Twitter. Yes, it is. Hot antitrust summer. Yeah, I think that will unquestionably be refiled. But it is indicative. By the way, I also want to point out that when this news came out, Facebook stock went up 4.2%, making it what I think the one of only, I don't know, six-ish companies to surpass $1 trillion in market capitalization, which it did in 17 years. But no way is it just, you can't just go around saying it's a monopoly. Don't be crazy. But it does.
It's a monopoly.
What's so interesting about this, though, is that Lina Khan, Amy Klobuchar, like plenty of other lawmakers and scholars have been saying, this is why antitrust law is in some cases an ill-fitting glove when it comes to these companies, because there are such set standards, you know, consumer harm and monopoly as defined by a very specific metric that sometimes are hard to apply.
Hmm.
However,
was it you?
Yeah, sorry.
Okay, go ahead. What? Well, I was just going to say, was it you or somebody else who had, yeah, right? We got a little lag here. You or somebody else who had Klobuchar on tech 6 weeks ago. It must have been you, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it was.
Or was it? Yep. Yeah. Right.
And that is one. So one of the arguments is antitrust law is going to have to be updated for the digital age. Another one, though, Lina Khan makes the argument, and actually so does Tim Wu, who we had on ages ago, but who's
years
been,
ago.
I think, appointed
years
an
ago.
Official advisor. And he wrote a very, very, very wonky book about antitrust, in which, though, he did make a very strong argument that existing antitrust law is plenty to deal with these companies as long as the lawsuits are structured appropriately and well. So
okay,
now
so
we
I've got
out.
A couple more questions.
How
do you think this plays, right? Because I did not go to law school. I could not get into any of the law schools I applied to. But one imagines that as Chair Khan is drafting this revised lawsuit, she's going to frame it in a way that will let it be applicable not just to Facebook, but also to, say, Amazon and Google and all the other biggies. What do you think?
I don't know. That's maybe. I mean, it depends on what version of monopoly violation they want to allege against Facebook, because we are entering a period of refinement of our complaints, right? And the complaint against Amazon and Apple and Google is this idea of the gatekeeper problem, which is, you know, they're the gatekeeper through which every other small business and small company and consumer has to pass in order to connect with each other. So then they have this outsized impact on the way that business is conducted, because if you want to be a successful app, you got to be in Apple's app store, and then you have to agree to their 30% cut and, you know, be promoted by them and whatever else happens. And then Facebook, I think, is a little bit different, actually, because it doesn't fit that marketplace thing quite so cleanly. It's more about its sort of size and influence. There is also an argument about whether Facebook is a monopoly because it monopolizes our data, and whether that allows them to So their monopoly argument actually has a little bit more, it could have a little bit more to do with advertising, the advertising market, and the digital advertising market, and then monopolizing our data and using that to sort of like force unfair deals that then harm consumers mm-hmm. because we don't see any competition or, you know, our data is shared without our knowledge.
Yeah. All right. One more, and then we can return to the regularly scheduled format of this podcast. But and I know you've been out reporting, and when you're out reporting, it's tough to pay attention to the news. But I'm going to guess you caught up on the whole House Judiciary Committee on the markup of those antitrust laws and where that's going to go. Do you have a thought on those that is germane to this, or would you like to take a pass? Both of which are fine.
Like the markup on the bills to maybe potentially break them up, that thing?
Yeah, break them up and limit their purchases and, you know, make them pay more. Yeah, all that stuff.
Yeah. I didn't follow that exact hearing.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Were there updates other than like That's all fair. Six of those bills being filed? I mean, I was out there in
well,
the field.
Well, all six were filed. All six were filed. Five of six passed, but it's early in the game. All right. Well, that was a sideways question.
Okay.
My bad.
Yeah. Oh, no. Believe me, like that tells you how far afield I really was.
Yeah. Well, there you go. That's right. That's a beautiful part
idea.
About reporting trip.
So great.
Who's, I don't even know who's driving. Is that Juan Carlos? I don't even know. Brian.
It's Brian.
Well, hit that sting, yo. There we go.
That's why he was so professional. He was like 10 seconds.
I know, right? I know. I'm like, dude, do you know how we do things around here?
bless him. We just kept talking.
Oh my God. That's right. Okay. So I need to do a little mea culpa here. Actually, no, it's like a semi backflip of a mea culpa. So I have been, dubious, questioning of LeVar Burton's quest to become the next host of Jeopardy. But I would like to commend everybody's attention just because it's an interesting piece, an interview in the New York Times of, I think it was Friday, maybe Thursday, but New York Times Magazine, mm-hmm. so it comes out early. Anyway, about him and why he wants it and what he thinks it would mean, and I think everybody should read it. I'm not convinced yet. Haven't seen his audition, which happens in July, but it's a really interesting piece on why he thinks it's important that he get this job. So
it is pretty lovely, and he's so thoughtful and so smart, and has had such a remarkable Hollywood history. Yep. It is at a minimum will make you smile.
A long time, for sure. For sure. Totally.
And he's the best agent totally house Jeopardy. I'm just echoing the internet there, by the way. That was just I was just acting as a conduit for the whole of Twitter, which is going to come to you right now.
Down on my head, for sure. Yes.
I know that we have been down on the gender reveal party situation because mainly what we keep
they
hearing
like start fires they and they're terrible. Yeah.
Exactly. And it's just, and it's sort of, you know, it has stained the whole category somewhat rightfully because like fires and deaths shouldn't be happening because of baby stuff. That's ridiculous. However, there was one posted on Twitter this week, which is the greatest thing I've ever seen. These people staged like a WWE gender reveal where they had a guy in a blue tutu and tights wrestle. Totally WWE style. Like, there were like,
wait, I have to click on this now.
Like, sledgehammers and they were backflips and they were throwing each other against the ropes. And then the guy in the pink tutu and tights. And then they were wrestling. And a guy comes in with a chair. Like, I mean, it was just like this wonderful WWE. And it was like the winner is going to be which gender it is. And I'm sorry, but it was the most delightful thing I have ever seen. I watched the whole thing.
They put up a ring. 2.2 million views on this thing. Oh my goodness.
And it is literally purely wholesome and delightful. And there was a great comment. That's I wouldn't read that many comments if I were you. But there was one great comment that was like, you know, you can think this whole thing is stupid, but imagine having this many friends who were this committed and excited
That's
on
true.
Your behalf.
Like, crowd.
Those are good friends. And that is fun. And wrestling is hilarious.
It's a by the way. It's a
dude, what is it? Come on!
What? Oh, come on.
I cannot believe you spoiled that.
You can't spoil. You cannot spoil something that 2.2 million people on the internet have seen. Cannot. Cannot. No. Uh-uh.
Bridget,
no.
We're going to have to take that out.
you should beep it. That's what you should do. You should beep it. That's what you should do.
Yes, beep it. Because it's the whole point. You watch the whole thing. You can't know. And it's so exciting. Oh, my God.
2 million people have seen it.
This freaking guy. I think that leaves over 320 something million who haven't.
Oh, man. Okay.
Unbelievable.
So,
unbelievable.
We're done now. Tomorrow, it's Tuesday. We're doing deep dive fossil fuels. Couple of big major developments lately. Investors on the board of Exxon, investors who, by the way, are not thrilled with Exxon's business model, looking at the future of fossil fuels as a business as it faces, a warming planet and climate change and 114 degrees in Portland, if I could round that circle there, square that circle, whatever it is. Questions about that or any other topic, actually, emails, voice memos, we take them all. MakeMeSmart@marketplace.org. Hit us up, please.
Please. Please. We'll see you tomorrow. Yeah, that is perversely good timing, isn't it? Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Marissa Cabrera, who will be in charge of the bleep button. Today's program was engineered by Brian Alston.
You got them all, sister. Read on through.
The right one.
They're giving you more airtime since you're back.
Oh, look at that. Bridget Bodner is the senior producer and the executive director of On Demand. It's a charge me up as you're just going with the Ron Burgundy approach to this.
Highly trained. Oh, my goodness.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.